It's now 10:26 and we're live in studio with Teodora Sutra. She and her family moved from Latvia to Ireland in 1999, and aged 8 she had little or no English, but she settled in. And she's now 23 and works as a model based here in Dublin. And she spent her teenage years in Wexford. But this September will mark the first anniversary of a terrible tragedy that happened to her family. And we're going to talk about that in a moment. But Teodora, very nice to see you. We were talking there a second ago that, you know, it seems strange to say Teodora because I feel like I'm missing the H.
Yeah, everyone's used saying Theodora.
Yeah, where's the name from? It's
a Greek name.
Yeah.
Yeah, my mum called me Teodora because she likes kind of strange names, and it's unusual even for Latvians, you know, that's not a very common name in Latvia or anything, so yeah.
Well, tell us a little bit about yourself, because we know so many people from Latvia now living in Ireland. In the last 10 years, you know, we've met and bumped into and work with people from Latvia. So, but I don't really get to sit and have any classic conversation with people from Latvia. So this is nice. Tell us a little bit about your background and where you're from in Latvia and what sort of a place it is.
I was born in Riga, and I lived there till I was 8 with my family and stuff. And then we decided to move over here because just a bit of a change. And there was obviously much more work over here than back home, and you earn more money. And we were one of the first kind of, I suppose, foreign families to move over here from Latvia. You know, when we moved over, everyone in school was like, where is Latvia? Do they have food there? I mean, do they have clothes? And they had no idea about anything. You know, we were the only foreign family in our school.
In Wexford.
In Blackwater. Yeah. So it was very strange for everybody.
How did you end up in you know, from Riga to Blackwater?
Yeah.
I'm not being derogatory about Blackwater, but just, you know.
No, I understand. It's tiny. It's a tiny little village.
Yeah.
I don't really know. I guess my stepdad at the time found a job there in Wexford. And I suppose when you're coming from a foreign country, Wexford, or to us, we had no idea where anywhere in Ireland was. So we didn't know it was going to be so teeny tiny and so kind of quiet.
But you were 8 years old.
So
did you see it as an adventure, or did you see it as a complete removal from what you knew and loved?
No, definitely an adventure.
Good.
Yeah, definitely. I mean, I was excited. We were excited to come over here to a different country, different language, different people. So it was all very exciting. I didn't think of it as, you know, being taken away from my friends or anything like that. No.
So it was a good age to travel then, you know, like if you were 14 or 15, it might have been a
Yeah, and I had my sister who's 2 years older than me, and my brother who's 2 years younger than me. So, you know, we're all kind of the same age. And so it wasn't like I was alone with my parents and, you know, had nobody.
Good. So you were surrounded by those you love. And in the school as an 8-year-old, you would have been considered to be something of an exotic sort of bird, if you know what I mean. And I mean that in the true sense of the word. Because you were, you know, foreign, and you look, you don't look tremendously different to, you know, an Irish person, really.
No,
do you know what I mean?
No. Everyone wanted to make friends with us. They were like surrounding us in school.
Well, that's good,
everyone
isn't it?
Wanted to talk to us, and it was all a little bit crazy, but it was fun.
But did you have much English? I mean, you were 8 from Riga.
We had basic English. You know, our granny used to teach us English, and every weekend and every day that we stay with her after school, she'd give us like lessons in English and stuff. She didn't know we'd be moving over here one day. She just kind of wanted us to learn.
She was smart. She saw probably what was coming, that English is useful
psychic
to have. Yeah, she might have been. So you grew up then in Wexford, and did you enjoy it? Did you find it a challenge, or did you find it a little too quiet for you, maybe?
Not as a child, no. But then once I finished secondary school, I definitely wanted to move. You know, I like cities. I mean, Riga's a big city. And as a child, I didn't notice the kind of difference, you know, living in the countryside. But then I think once you finish secondary school, I was like, what am I going to do? You know, it was too quiet. I need more people. And
you were a city kind of person.
Yeah, I think so.
Did you have aspirations when you were leaving school to do anything in particular?
Not really. I never had. I mean, when I was a child, I wanted to be a doctor, you know, or something that. But not really, because I kind of fell into the modeling. So I kind of.
How did you fall into the modeling?
I entered the competition, Ford Supermodel of the World, and I got through to the final of the Irish Heats and I won it. So I got to go to New York and do that. And ever since then, I kind of stuck with it.
So what gave you the confidence to go for it? Because you'd need to be very comfortable in your skin saying, I am beautiful enough to go for this competition. Yeah. Do you know what I mean? Without being arrogant, you know.
But. Yeah, well, I mean, I was 15, so I didn't...
Very young.
My mum kind of brought me in. We accidentally kind of ended up entering the competition. We only kind of did it as a joke. I never wanted to be a model.
Right.
Or it was never an idea. We just kind of seen it in the paper and we're like, oh, we'll pop by. And I was a little nerd, you know, with yeah. my little runners and no makeup or anything. Things, so we just did it as a joke.
Just let's see what happens, and you won the competition.
Thankfully, we did it. Yeah,
and you've been a model ever since.
Yeah, full-time. Well, I mean, full time model only recently in the last kind of 2-3 years, but yeah.
Okay, do you enjoy it?
I do. I really like it.
Is it grueling?
Grueling.
Is it tough?
Yeah, I mean, there's tough days, and there's days where it's like all fun and glamorous, and then there's days where you just. It's like, oh, why am I doing this? It's tough, you know, long hours and stuff, but I really enjoy it.
Do you do the are you catwalk or are you kind of like doing the Stephen's Green photocall for Chris?
No, don't really do many photocalls. I'm more catwalk and editorial and photo shoots.
Okay, so
and,
kind yeah. of the proper, kind of higher level class of modeling.
Well, yeah, I guess.
If you know what I mean.
Yeah, okay.
You're just going to roll with that, aren't you? Yeah, good.
Yeah.
Now, on the subject of eating and being thin and everything like that, were you ever told to eat less or eat more or
no.
never given any sort of great training?
No. No, I think the Irish, the industry in Ireland is very healthy and it's so small and I think clients prefer you to look healthy and I mean, it shows on your skin. If I was ever told to lose weight, I'd have to do it unnaturally, I feel, you know, and
yeah.
I'd have a spotty face and unhealthy, and they don't like that over here. I mean, they prefer girls to look the way they are, you know, natural.
More real. Do you think Irish models are a little fuller of figure?
No, definitely
not.
No. I think they look really, really good.
Do you think they look the same as
others? And they're so into fitness these days. Yeah. Everyone's like working out and eating healthy. And I think they look great.
I think fitness is the new alcoholism in Ireland.
I
think people have become...
It's such a big trend.
And they've become kind of a holic about it, though. I think some people are fit to the point of, you know, sometimes the guys would drink too much. I think people can be overdoing it in the gym and so on.
Yeah, maybe. But I think that's better than going out all the time.
It is. But a little balance in the world might be nicer, I think, for some people. In fact, speaking of being fit, your boyfriend, that's his business, isn't it?
He's a personal trainer.
Did you meet on a treadmill or how did that happen?
No, God, no. We met in Hollister. It's a store in Dundrum. We were boat working there
I've stood outside waiting for teenagers to come out of Hollister, obviously my own, obviously, and you were one of the beautiful people in Hollister and he was one of the beautiful people outside Hollister.
Yeah, and that's how we met. It's very random, but I suppose I'm happy I started working there because I wouldn't have met James otherwise. Yeah,
is he one of the lads with the
six tops
pack
off,
outside?
Yeah.
What first attracted you to the topless doorman from
Hollister?
Beautiful
eyes.
Yeah, I don't believe it for a second. We're here to talk about other things, obviously, and I need you to talk to me a little bit about Gabriella and tell me about her and what she was like and where she fits in the family.
She was the youngest out of all of us. She was 9, and there's such a huge difference because my younger brother he's 21 now and she's 9, so there's a huge gap between the two of them, you know. She was amazing, you know. She's such a kind of funny and kind of hippie child, you know. She was never into really Barbies or like
makeup and hair.
Yeah, that kind of thing. She wasn't like that. She was really into nature and trees and animals. She really liked that. Like, she had a tree in Quirtown that she'd go over and hug, you know, because that was her little friend.
Proper hippie.
Yeah, proper hippie.
Good.
Yeah. So, and I think I've learned that from her. I kind of pay attention to beautiful things like butterflies and birds and swans when you see them and, you know, beautiful clouds in the sky, because she'd always point little things like that out instead of being like, oh, I want to go home, watch TV or like...
Yeah.
She'd always be like, oh, I want to go outside or I want to go to the zoo or something like
that. What a lovely character. I mean, a sense of character about a
girl. Very different to other kids. You know, I find that she was very... just so different, you know, kind of the things that I suppose me and my mom and everyone expected her to like, she didn't. She liked like real kind of simple things in life, which is great.
So it's a very sweet disposition to have.
Yeah, yeah.
We have to go back to September 2013. This is less than a year ago. It was
a year in next month.
It was the 14th, and you started to get word that something was awfully wrong, tragically wrong. What happened?
Yeah, yeah. I mean, I only got the call at, I was asleep. It was 3 a.m. on the 14th, and my mom called and she just said, you know, there's a fire, Gabrielle is gone, and I didn't understand, you know, what she meant. Is she gone, as in, is she hiding, or, you know, is she, you know, you don't understand in the middle of the night, you know, I was like, craziness. And then she had to explain to me that what had happened and that the house burned down. And
whose house was she in, or what was happening?
Philomena, she's Aiden's mother. She was minding her. My mum was out with her friend Aiden for dinner, and you know, they had no clue, you know, and they came back from dinner and the whole house was up in smoke, and, you know, they tried to get in and they couldn't, you know, because they, from the smoke inhalation, they couldn't go up the stairs, the whole, you know, there was smoke coming out. And I suppose, I mean, I'm glad I wasn't there to experience that, because you're trying, you know, that there's two people upstairs, you know, and you're trying to save them and you can't. There's
were they able to, were they awake? Were they able to make some
no,
sort of...
No, we were told afterwards that they were asleep. Yeah, so that's very, very...
There's a sort of a weird comfort that you have to take from such a horrible situation.
Yeah, yeah, I mean... if we would have, you know, if they would have told us that they were somewhere else, you know, downstairs or something,
or
you
panicking
know.
Or shouting.
Yeah, yeah.
You know.
But it is comforting, if you can call it that, to know that they were asleep, you know, and in deep sleep and kind of had no idea what was going on, you know.
So Gabriella and your mum's friend Aiden's mother died. Mm. It died in the fire that
yes,
night.
Both of them did. Yeah.
It's a horrible situation.
Very, very horrible. Yeah, yeah. I'd say I wouldn't, you know, wish that on anybody. And it just kind of shows that you just don't know in life what can happen. I suppose God has his way for everybody. And there was no way of stopping. And that's what I had to tell my mum and, you know, Aiden and everybody. There's nothing that they could have done differently. You know, there's nothing that they could have changed or anything. It just, yeah.
You're very stoical about it, actually. It's funny that you seem to have come to terms with it in a way that strikes me as being philosophical. Or are you a religious person? I mean, are you strong?
Yeah, we're a religious family, you know. We're Lutheran. So I think that's another thing that kind of really helped, after a while to deal with it.
Well, tell me a little bit about that, because I don't, I wouldn't be au fait with the Lutheran religion. So do you have a particular take on death that might be different to maybe the Catholic faith or something like that?
I'm not really, I don't really know much about the Catholic religion as
no,
such.
No, but I mean from a Lutheran point of view, what do you believe?
You know, we believe in afterlife. So I do believe when somebody dies that we will see them again in the afterlife. So that's kind of, I think... that also was very comforting, going through something so, you know, horrible as somebody so close to us dying, and knowing that one day we will see them again, you know, and I think that's helped us a lot to kind of deal with it.
Yeah.
As hard as it is and everything, you know, just thinking that we will see them one day, and she is in a happier place. Both of them, Philomena and Gabriella, they are in a happier place. You know, they're in heaven, and they're watching over us, and that, you know, you can cry and cry, and you can be sad all your life if you wish. But I think we found it very calming to know that we have somebody like that, like two little angels up there looking down on us and looking after us, and we will see them one day, you know, and also that they went together, you know, that maybe it wasn't Gabriella alone or her alone, that they went up to heaven together. That's also very kind of...
almost hand in hand.
Yes, yeah.
And that allows you to think that although they're gone from here, that in fact they're in what you might call the waiting room of the soul.
Yes,
and
yeah.
And that eventually you'll hook up again, and in due course when your time comes.
Yeah, yeah. And that really has helped, you know, us to know that, and we believe that. Yeah.
How about your mom? How's she doing?
She's moving on with her life, and she's learning to live alone, I guess, you know, without little Gabriella and learning a whole new life. Yeah. As such, because you, all of us kids have moved out and, you know, getting on with our lives and kind of, you know, becoming adults. I mean, we're all over 20, us kids. And now that Gabriella's gone, my mum is, it's like she's learning to live a whole new life on her own and changing the rules of her life.
Does she talk about Gabriella with you much, or is it sort of unspoken? Or
No, definitely not.
Of the conversation?
We think it's very important to speak about it. I think it's hard. I know, and for other people, say strangers to, or even, you know, friends to start the subject with you, they find it very difficult, or they think that you will be very upset if they do, or if they ask about it and stuff, which I think is kind of, I don't know, I dislike that, you know. I like talking about her. It does upset you. It doesn't upset you. It might make you a little bit sad thinking about it, but I think that's very good. You know, you keep...
healthy.
It's healthy, yeah. You need to. And
would you prefer if people started a conversation with you about Gabriella rather than avoided it?
Yeah, definitely.
Your friends and family and things like that.
Yeah, I think so. I think, I mean, they do. I can see why it would be hard, or they might think it would be awkward. That's understandable. But I think definitely talking about the person and keeping them in your head and having pictures of them around and, you know, not hiding that person just because it's, you might think it's sad. I think it's good to, you know.
I found, you know, presenting this program that I've met a lot of people who've been through very difficult times in the course of their lives. And one thing I've noticed in asking the question a lot of times is this, that people who've been through a horrible time prefer to talk about it with people like you're doing now. And they don't feel that other people are prying or being nosy. They actually feel it's a way of letting it all out and remembering the person. And also like a therapy
for that person that's going through grieving. Yeah. I think the whole, you know, grieving is not just about, you know, crying and being depressed. I mean, you need to talk about that person. You need to kind of... that's how you kind of come to terms with it. Yeah. And, you know...
Did you try therapy, by the way, since...
No, I haven't actually. My therapy is talking to my mum.
Your mum is your therapist.
She is my therapist.
I hope she
and
has
I'm her
somebody
therapist.
To talk. Are you sure?
Yeah.
She's not keeping stuff from you as her mum, you know.
No, I'm her biggest therapist.
Are you sure?
Yeah.
She lets it all out, does she?
She does, yeah.
All right, okay.
Which is great.
That is good. It's good that you have each other like that, which is good.
Yeah.
And the rest of the family are doing okay, because your anniversary is coming up for Gabriella.
Yeah.
Can I ask you how you propose to remember her this September next month?
We're still thinking about it. So we're all going to get together. Definitely my all our family in Ireland. So that's my brother and my sister Margarita and my mum.
Yeah.
So we're all going to get together and think about what we're going to do. You know, we'll definitely celebrate it together.
It should be near a tree. I think you should go to the tree in Enniscorthy.
I think we might handle us around her little friend.
I think that'd be really nice. That's what I would do. I'd go down to the tree and say, listen, we're thinking about you today, you know.
Yeah.
She loved that tree.
Yeah. She actually did.
She hugged the tree.
It's so cool.
That's where you should go.
Yeah, so I'm going to think about something to do for the whole weekend and, remember her and celebrate her.
You have, you're a sports fan yourself. I mean, you like your fitness, obviously, but I understand you have a condition that can make that a little tricky. Is that right, too?
Yeah, I've got spina bifida. Hmm. Yeah, I only found out in the last, I think it was like 2 years ago I found out.
Right.
Yeah, so I'm like a granny. My hip hurts and my back hurts sometimes.
What is spina bifida? I mean, obviously, we've spoken to people about it, and some people with spina bifida are wheelchair bound, aren't they? And they're in severe particular physical condition.
Yeah, I got the milder case of it.
Yeah, what does it mean?
It's actually, I think it's in the 23rd week of your pregnancy. So it happens when you're
in the womb. Okay.
Yeah. So it's like one of your vertebrae on your spine doesn't properly develop, so you get kind of liquid in it, I suppose, and it gets like inflamed or something, and then you get back pains or hip pains.
So
are
you on medication or do you have
No. I went to physio and stuff in Latvia, and he just said to kind of build up your core muscles, your core and your lower back muscles, and that keeps the spine kind of in place.
Okay, but you're not in pain of any sort, really, are you?
I am once in a while, yeah, but it's not constant, which is good. So I'd get like really bad back pains or hip pains once a month, once every 2 months. You know, it depends if I've been running or something, which I shouldn't be, then I'd feel the pain in my back, or if I've been standing too long.
But your job is often about standing too long and being fit, that is to say running.
Maybe not the best job.
You're the worst candidate for spina bifida, really. Yeah. And then God...
I'm a rebel.
God, who can be a stand-up comedian, decides, I'll give her this and see how she rolls with it. But
it doesn't stop me doing anything.
Clearly,
me and James did the half marathon a couple of weeks ago, and as a challenge, I was like, I have to do it. I don't care about my back. And it was painful for about a week afterwards. But no, I'd never let it stop me from... I mean, it doesn't stop me from doing anything. It's just pain. As in, it doesn't stop me from walking or running or anything. It just kind of... I suffer with the pain a little bit afterwards if I do kind of...
So you just have to decide this is going to happen. Yeah. It's been lovely to see you.
Thank you.
And thanks for coming to share your story with us this morning.
Teodora
Sutra.
Yes.
And good luck with everything. And I hope that the anniversary goes well, whether there's the tree or not the tree. But I hope
you
remember Gabriella with great joy, if you can, in such a situation. I hope your mum as well, too.
We will. Thank you.
Thanks for your time this morning. All right. The time now is about 14, maybe 13 minutes to 11 o'clock. Una Rogers, very good morning to you, Una.
Hi, good morning, Ryan.
How are you doing?
I'm very good, thank you.
What happened in 2000?
Well, unfortunately, I was living in America.
What part?
New York.
Right.
And my parents are Irish, and they immigrated there, and they had me and my brother and my sister. And we were renting a house, and one night, unfortunately, it went on fire. And my parents and my brother passed away in the fire. Me and my sister survived.
I am so sorry to hear that.
Oh, thank you very much.
That is just horrific.
Yeah.
How old were you?
I was 9 and my sister was 6.
And how old was your brother?
He was 4 at the time.
How did... I mean, do you remember waking up and the chaos of the night, or is it all blacked out or blanked out?
No, I remember it vividly.
What happened?
Me and my brother and my sister, we used to always share a bed. We were very close at the time, so they were all in my bed. And I heard coughing outside the door, and I went to open the door, and just the smoke just hit me straight away. And I think I stood there for a couple of seconds, and then it hit me what was going on. And I think I just went into some sort of mode or something, and I ran to the window, opened up the window, tried to get my brother and sister out. My sister jumped out, and my brother was too afraid, and so I went out the window trying to, I don't know, really, at 9 years of age, I don't really know what I was doing, but got out the window anyway and called fire brigade.
I find that very hard to comprehend, because it's just so sad.
It is. It's my story.
It is. It's such a sad story. You were on the front of the house with your sister, who was quite obviously you might have been injured or whatever. And did you hear or see your brother or your folks as the house went up?
Well, when I opened the door, the coughing was from my mom, but the smoke was so thick she didn't see me at the door. And we found out later that she had actually gone into her room to call the fire brigade. She was found with the phone in her hand. And I didn't see my dad, but when I had jumped out the window, I heard his voice in my room. So he literally had just walked into the room just after. Mm. But so, yeah.
God, I'm sorry. That's just such a shocking story. Were you there when the fire brigade arrived, Una, or?
I was, yeah. I ran into my neighbours, and they rang it. And then everything kind of happened very fast, and my neighbours took us in, and then we went to the hospital. But the rest of the night's a bit of a blur.
Why did you get in touch with us this morning?
I heard the other woman talking about her story and her 9-year-old sister who had died, and I just found it very touching, actually. I think 14 years on after my story, I don't really think about it on a day-to-day basis, so it's nice to be reminded sometimes that there's other people out there who have experienced something similar. I mean, nobody will ever experience what I did, but she's the closest I've heard in a while, and it was just very touching.
But you had a happy moment rather than a sad moment.
I did, actually. I remembered them fondly. And
that's lovely.
It's nice to do that from time to time.
And you prefer if people say it to you, if you know, not all the time, but if you were to have a chat, you'd rather they said, Una, how are you doing? You know, God, you had a tough time. Or would you prefer them just to leave you alone?
I suppose that's like a day-to-day thing, really.
Okay.
But really, yeah, I prefer they talk about it.
Good.
It's something that, as a kid, they don't talk about, but now as I'm an adult now, they do talk about it, and it's nice.
You're living back in Ireland?
I'm living here since then, 14 years.
14 years, okay.
Yeah.
And life okay with you?
Life's great. Brilliant.
Oh, good. I'm really glad to hear that.
Thank you.
This is really good to talk to you. I appreciate your time this morning, and look after yourself, won't you?
Thanks for calling, Ryan. That's
don't
brilliant.
Mention. Nice to talk to you. And take care. Thanks for that today.
Bye-bye.
Take care. Bye-bye.